Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show, Wednesday edition of the program. The battle of our era right now is over. How do we get back to normalcy in a COVID era? Despite the fact that right now, as we just finished the Labor Day, we have twice as many people hospitalized as we did last Labor Day. You'll recall that Joe Biden ran his entire campaign predicated on the idea that he was going to fix COVID and get us back to, quote, normalcy. That has not happened. And what's become interesting is two of the most, I would say, stellar advocates, battlers, if you will, over how exactly we are going to reconcile COVID in this country have turned into Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and, of course, the tin-pot dictator tyrant Dr. Fauci. And they went head-to-head talking about the data in a way, frankly, that usually doesn't get talked about. Listen to Ron DeSantis talk about the situation in Florida and also lay out that herd immunity has not occurred as a result of the vaccine. Listen to this.
If you're going to force vaccine mandates on people, just understand that what the data is showing us about the vaccine, the data is showing us you're much less likely to be hospitalized or die if you're vaccinated. That is true, and I think you see it in the statistics. However, the vaccinations have not created herd immunity. And so if the idea is that having herd immunity, you force everyone to do this and that will create herd immunity, that has not happened. It's still spreading. Obviously in Florida, we're going down now, which is great. But that's not what the issue is it creating the herd immunity? Fauci also said if 50% were vaccinated, you would not see any surges anymore. Well, that isn't true.
So that is a strong case from Ron DeSantis there. Again, talking about data, which is not allowed most places. Of course, the tin-pot petty dictator tyrant Fauci was not happy with the fact that his own words were thrown in his face about if we had 50% of people vaccinated. And by the way, 75% of people 18 and up have now had at least one part of the vaccination. Fauci had to fire back at DeSantis.
Well, that's not true at all. I mean, obviously, it's important for you as an individual for your own personal protection, safety, and health. But when you have a virus that's circulating in the community and you are not vaccinated, you are part of the problem because you're allowing yourself to be a vehicle for the virus to be spreading to someone else. So it isn't as if it stops with you. If that were the case, then it would be only about you. But it doesn't. You can get infected even if you get no symptoms or minimally symptomatic and then pass it on to someone who in fact might be very vulnerable, an elderly person, a person with an underlying disease. So when you're dealing with an outbreak of an infectious disease, it isn't only about you. There's a societal responsibility that we all have.
Buck Sexton, your reaction to DeSantis versus Fauci.
Why is Fauci on TV still every 5 minutes? We have a massive federal health bureaucracy. There, he's at NIAID, right? But under the umbrella of the National Institutes of Health, NIH, there's also the CDC. We talk more about the CDC, but somehow Fauci is still the face of all of this. Fauci is the face of all the failed policies. That's stuff, right. Has not actually worked the way we were told it would over and over. Now, they could argue that in some aspects it's had some efficacy, depends on what mitigation measure we're talking about here. But, you know, Clay, our friend, I know you had him on the show on Monday on Labor Day, Alex Berenson put out a great little quick cheat sheet. Because we often say here, how many times is Fauci going to be wrong before people say enough is enough? How many times do we have to see his predictions being completely false? And Alex pulled together for in his Substack the following. I mean, here's Fauci, November 12th, 2020, Bloomberg. Fauci says end of pandemic is in sight thanks to vaccines. That was in November of last year, right?
Right after the election, remember, Buck, when they miraculously could announce that the vaccines were ready, literally 2 days after the weekend of the election, right? I mean, it's crazy.
Fauci predicts U.S. could see signs of herd immunity by late March or early April. That was December 15th, 2020 in NPR. Fauci gives sunnier outlook for end of pandemic. U.S. will see big, big difference by summer or early fall of 2020. Clay, we're seeing a big difference, as we know, 300% rise in cases yes. year over year. And then finally, as of August 25th, and again, hat tip to our friend Berenson for all this on his Substack, Dr. Fauci says no end to COVID pandemic before spring 2022 at the earliest. This little lab coat tyrant is a jackass. This guy says every 6 months or so, it's going to be all over. Just listen. And then we wait 6 months or 3 months, whatever the timeline is he gives. And he's wrong. And he's like, just give it 6 more months. It never ends as long as this guy is still given credibility, not just by the Democrat corporate media, but by millions of Americans. I look at people now, I think, how is it possible that any person of sound judgment and rationality could listen to this little totalitarian smurf on the television and think that they should pay attention to him at this point?
It's such a great question, Buck, and I think about that a lot, too. I think one answer is there's a huge percentage of the population that wants to have certainty, and they want to turn their brain off and listen to people who are doctors, right? And I don't know, you've probably heard it a ton. Every now and then I dive into mentions and see what people are saying when I'm sharing things. And one of the primary things I get is, are you a doctor? No, I'm not a doctor. But if I had wanted to be a doctor, I would be a doctor, right? I mean, this is, and I think this is an interesting response. I'm curious if you've thought about it a lot too. Buck, you're smart enough to have been a doctor if you wanted to be a doctor. I'm smart enough to have been a doctor if I wanted to be a doctor. This idea that only doctors are able to look at data and analyze it and make decisions that are smart flies in the face of all American public policy, because most governors and senators and congressmen are not doctors. But we elect people and we listen to people based on, Buck, whether or not we trust their judgment and their ability to analyze facts. And so this idea that you should have to be a doctor to look at COVID rates. I mean, Ron DeSantis is not a doctor. His analysis, by the way, he's a Harvard law grad, could have certainly been a doctor if he had wanted to be a doctor, is smart enough to have been a doctor, but he's smart enough to look at data. You and I are smart enough to look at data. And a lot of people out there aren't willing to look at data. They want to be led. They're comfortable being sheep. And that's why people are still listening to Fauci.
You have this credentialed class in the country in particular. I mean, you're talking about a lot of MDs, and these are the blue check MDs that you see who make noise and go on MSNBC and post photos like the one that I sent you of the mom doctor with her three kids with masks yes. and face shields on, as if face shields are meant to prevent, like they use them in some capacities in a medical setting. The actual splatter, it doesn't do anything about aerosolized virus. Wearing a face shield, it's like if you were a World War I infantryman and you put on a face shield to protect you from mustard gas, you were going to have a very bad day. Yes. It doesn't do anything. They must know this at some level, but they believe that by continuing to adhere to this, they not only give themselves meaning and think that they're more secure, Clay, they're also tying themselves to the rest of the smart people. It's not just virtue signaling. There's an intelligence signaling that they think goes on here. All the really, I mean, you're mentioning doctors and how, oh, you're not a doctor. All the super smart people out there believe Fauci, even though, of course, that's not true. There are doctors, epidemiologists that we've talked to, we've had on the show from Stanford, from Cambridge, from all over the country who will say that this is crap. And they're never going to admit, Clay, no matter what the data actually says, you keep saying, look at the data, that there's a very real chance that almost everything that the Fauciites have told us to do did nothing of benefit yes, and was massively counterproductive.
Theater. All cosmetic theory. I mean, I think that's what, like, you listed all the things that Fauci has gotten wrong. Here's a good question for people out there. What's he gotten right? Like, what has Fauci, beyond a shadow of a doubt, looking at the data, gotten right? I'm not sure, Buck, that he's gotten a single thing right. And I'm giving him credit for being adjusting his opinions constantly, because originally, remember, he was like, oh, masks don't work. It makes no sense to go get masks. He initially, like, this 6-foot rule is total crap. Like, everything that Fauci has advocated is cosmetic theater, and it is totally non-effective, ineffective, has had zero impact.
I think Fauci has got one thing very right, unfortunately, and that is making it very clear to everybody in the Democrat Party that he's effectively a Democrat operative in a lab coat and believes in authoritarian bureaucratic control of the American people. I think he played the politics right. You know, this is a guy who was somehow in the Trump administration in charge of the awful Trump response, they say, right? And we know, of course, not true, but managed to not only keep but really elevate his job in the next administration. Well, why is that the case? How does that make, you know, whatever happened to Deborah Birx? Remember her? Well, she threw a big party at home and she told all of us not to see our relatives over Thanksgiving. That was kind of a bad move.
And then she just peaced out, though. But I do think it's an interesting question, Buck. And I don't know that we'll ever get the actual data. If we had done absolutely nothing at all, if we had just kept schools open, if everybody had kept working, if we had changed zero, like if we really hadn't done anything, would we be in a better place right now? Because if herd immunity is the way out, Buck, and that's really what DeSantis was arguing, and if we aren't going to get herd immunity through vaccination, which I think the data reflects that we're really not, ultimately everybody's going to have to get this, or enough people are going to have to get this that it's not spreading widely.
And we get actual herd immunity, which
is real herd immunity.
We're trying to induce essentially an artificial herd immunity through the vaccination process, not through the actual contact. I mean, the mRNA vaccine works by, you know, the spike protein, and this is a level of science that, you know, is legitimately not something that the that folks like me understand, but you do know that it's different than the T cell immunity you get from your immune system actually dealing with the virus. But Clay, to the point about what would happen if we had basically done nothing or done something close to nothing, fun fact, I'm putting Clay on the spot, but I think he didn't get this one right. How many people died yesterday in Sweden from COVID, Clay?
I think it's almost zero.
One. Yeah. So there you go.
I mean, I've looked at their death chart. They basically said, we're going to go for herd immunity, and COVID doesn't exist now in Sweden.
10 million people, folks. 10 million people a year ago, an experiment in death. The Swedes aren't listening to the science. Fauci is, I'm very, very concerned. You know, the whole thing. One person in the whole country. And by the way, it's not an anomaly. Zero the day before. Zero. I'm looking at the numbers right now. Zero the day before. One. Zero. They're losing more people to death by bee sting right now in Sweden, most likely, than they are from COVID.
And now, Swedish people are in a lot better shape, so they don't have as many fat people as we do, which I know you're not supposed to be able to talk about because, you know, it's horribly upsetting to mention fat people now. It's fat shaming, whatever else. But that's, I mean, we would be done with this if we had just peaced out and continued to live our lives instead of trying to shut everything down and allowing people like Fauci to continue to have power.
I also want to get us, Clay, focused in on in a few minutes how they're starting to move. You can tell the mobilization and the authoritarianism of COVID is now going to be transferred into other Democrat policy priorities, like, of course, climate change, which we've been saying all along. They've gotten the notes, apparently, the Biden folks. We can get into that in a second. But Clay, what do you got for us on cell phone service? I know you want to save folks money.
I want to save people a lot of money. And that's what we're doing right now in my own household. My 13-year-old has Pure Talk service. His mom and I wanted to get him a cell phone. We said, you need to be eighth grade. He got one for the start of school this year. And we know we can trust Pure Talk because I've had these guys in my house. They have the exact same network, exact same towers as one of the big three cell phone carriers, but for a lot less money. So right now, if you're with AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, you're paying way too much for your cell service. Pure Talk is just $30 a month for unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data. And if you ever go over, they don't nickel and dime you with extra charges. And get the same phone number. It's easy. It's incredibly simple to switch. Buck, how do people do it?
From your cell phone right now, dial #250 and say Pure Talk, and you'll save 50% off your first month. That's #250, say Pure Talk. Remember, the offer is unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. Once you dial #250 from your phone and say Pure Talk, you'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dial text message from Pure Talk. Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck, Clay, and I making sense of all the madness today, including AOC championing menstruating persons' rights. This is the term now you're supposed to use. That won't offend people. Let's just refer to a woman's cycle all the time without referring to a woman. And this is a member of Congress, folks. Plus, Biden is pushing the climate change lunacy. 50% roughly solar energy for the U.S. by 2050, they're saying. We got four Taliban members swapped out for Bo Bergdahl, who are now, by the Obama administration, we all remember that, now running essentially the Afghan government. They're like the cabinet. And you got the Robert E. Lee statue taking down a historic statue. Pelosi is calling Afghanistan a historic and remarkable withdrawal. So we got, and Manchin on the spending. Clay gets excited about the spending stuff.
I am excited to see what's going to happen with the budget.
So we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. That's all coming your way. But I mentioned to you before the break that climate change is the place the Democrats want to go next. They're not going to get off the total control of pandemic Fauciism until they can transfer this mass mobilization and authoritarianism to climate change, because then it's existential. They can control every aspect of your life. They're just telling us this is what they want to do. 16.
If our entire world and our entire society is going to shift because of climate change, it's a matter of how it's going to shift. So basically, if we do nothing to address climate change, we are going to see the continued destruction of our supply chains. We are going to see our crops not be able to grow in the same way. We will see our infrastructure begin to crumble away. We will see the continuation proliferation of other future pandemics as well. And so that is how our life could change if we do nothing.
Can we get all the trolls online to just go, AOC is not a scientist, right? Because that's what they do with us. How could it be any dumber than what she just said?
I understand that there's a lot of politicians who are just not. Look, here's what AOC is good at. She's good at getting attention, which is a big part of being a politician. She is good at the blue check brigade, like just kind of swarming around her. Because she says things, and a lot of Congress people don't really say things, but I've never heard her speak and thought, this is who should be representing. How old is AOC? Like 36, 37, something like, I don't even know.
I think younger.
She's that old, younger than that. Yeah. Like, I've never thought AOC should be the spokesperson of the millennial generation. And I don't think she advocates for anything that she advocates in a way that is remotely helpful to what she advocates for.
31, by the way.
31. You get the sense, by the way, that Nancy Pelosi, as much as she might dislike Mitch McConnell and as much as she might dislike other people, Nancy Pelosi genuinely, I feel like, detests AOC. Like, I really do when you hear her talk about it. But I got to tell you, a lot of you out there are suffering from chronic pain as a result of aging, exercise, overexertion, and the effects of everyday living. This means you or someone close to you is experiencing pain right now, and that's why we need to talk to you about Relief Factor. Created by doctors, over 15 years of scientific research, made for you, it'll take you with 100% drug-free product. Takes care of joint pain, knee, hip, back, neck, and shoulder pain. My wife uses this. You will love it as well. You need to join the more than 500,000 people and order the 3-week quick start for $19.95 today. All you have to do is go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor will help you feel the difference. 800-4-RELIEF. Join the hundreds of thousands of people who use this product every single day at relieffactor.com. $19.95 right now. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Comedy has been destroyed completely and utterly by left-wing righteousness. Comedians are terrified to make jokes. Used to be you'd flip on David Letterman, Johnny Carson, Jay Leno, and whatever your political leanings might be, president got made fun of, famous political leaders got made fun of in the monologue, and it was almost impossible to know what the overall political leanings of the comedian might be because they tried to be equal opportunity attackers. Now, comedy is basically dead in late night television, although we should mention, even though it doesn't get a lot of attention, Greg Gutfeld, you've been going on his show for a long time, Buck. Greg Gutfeld dunks all over Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon. Like, they absolutely destroy now, Greg Gutfeld does, Fox News, late night, programs.
They inherited those other comedians. They inherited massive platforms and audiences that were built in. Yeah, Fox is obviously a very large platform for news. There's not an inherited audience of a couple million people every night at 11 p.m. to watch comedy, which Greg, to his absolute credit, has built. And to Fox's credit, has allowed that kind of a show, which honestly there should be more shows like that, right? There should be more shows that try to be culturally relevant as well as news relevant from a, not even just a conservative, just a right of center or centrist perspective would be nice.
Or just a logical perspective. But it is interesting that show with Greg Gutfeld has begun to dominate. And here's my thesis. And I'm curious, before we play this clip from Jimmy Kimmel last night, I'm curious what you think in general about this thesis, Buck. I believe that what happened in late night television is Stephen Colbert went all in on attacking Donald Trump like crazy, and his show on CBS went from last place to first place because there were people who wanted to tune in to a Trump is awful comedic focused broadcast. Colbert had a lot of success, and then Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon chased Colbert to the point where, honestly, the smart play probably would have been to go in the opposite direction of Colbert. But because Hollywood is so left-wing and left-leaning, you can't get guests that are promoting their movies or are going to come on your television broadcast, period, if you go too far centrist or right-wing. And so they all chased each other down the left-wing rabbit hole and basically assured each other of mutual destruction.
So I remember the originator, in a sense, of this model, the guy who first got it right big time, and I'm sure used to see his show a lot, and I certainly did back when I was in college, was Jon Stewart with The Daily Show. And that was going back to the Bush administration. And what that was a place where, because liberals, I mean, you see this, they love the Maddow show during Russia collusion, even though it was all a lie, it wasn't true. But that's what they wanted to see. They prefer even more just the snarky, snide attack of someone pretending to be a comedian that's really doing political commentary with jokes, because one, they just want to see pies thrown at the people they disagree with. You know, those red state, anti-vax, Trump voting, MAGA hat people. But also beyond that, they don't want to be encumbered by facts, logic, reason, or decency. They just want to see their enemies mocked and humiliated. The left is obsessed with this. They also can tolerate no humiliation of their idols, their ideas. I mean, the fact that we haven't seen more comedy, Clay, about people walking around with gas masks or three masks on, or people that think it's
hazmat suits,
or it's normal to wear a mask driving alone in their car. I mean, this is ripe for comedy. I mean, these are things that
Biden himself is wildly ripe for ridicule.
And yet it doesn't happen, because we all know that the one thing the left cannot abide is the ridicule of its rituals and its ideas, because then the whole thing starts to fall apart. It's cultural resonance that makes it all so powerful. It's the cool kids watch Colbert and laugh at his stupid anti-Trump jokes, and so everybody else does it at the same time. But I think that really what you're seeing is actually just a form of propaganda, because they're doing political commentary on those shows, Colbert and Kimmel and whatever, but it's political commentary for stupid people. Because they don't actually, well, the moment they get challenged, it's, oh, I'm just a comedian, I'm just making jokes. Well, no, actually, you're making political arguments with jokes placed around it so that you're immune and you can just take snide cheap shots at the other side.
Are you with me growing up? If you watched Leno, I was a Letterman guy. I don't remember having any sense for what their political beliefs were.
I never thought that Letterman was funny one second of one day in my entire life. I didn't watch him that much. I did watch Leno sometimes, who I did think was funny. So this is amazing. This is another one of these areas where I see here, I go, Clay, for a guy I agree with on so many things, Letterman was a mean guy. I don't think he
Letterman.
Was a funny guy.
I loved Letterman. Oh, I would watch Letterman every night. I liked the way he deconstructed late night television. We could probably have a huge debate about this. But the bigger picture here is, would you agree with me as a Leno guy that you really didn't get the sense that you knew what Jay Leno or David Letterman thought politically?
Yes, he made jokes. He made jokes that were meant for the entire studio audience and everyone watching at home. You could have been a Bush voter and in the Leno years, laugh at jokes about Bush, and it wasn't uncomfortable because it came from a place of comedy, not a place of derision. And what's happened now is the left, because of cancel culture, one, has weaponized the culture against the mockery of things that they hold sacred, but also don't really have no interest in just the art of making people laugh so much as they want to be propagandists for their political side. And they want to humiliate their targets. They're not trying to make everybody laugh.
And it's interesting in that respect. Let's play this clip when we come back, because it is, I think a lot of you out there listening to us now have sort of a visceral reaction when I say Letterman or Leno, whether you like them or not, or certainly if you go back to Johnny Carson, they were equal opportunity comedians throwing punches and jabs in every direction, such that you really never had a sense for exactly what they believe themselves, almost in a Walter Cronkite sense, for lack of a better way.
Well, he was also a lib, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, but back in the day, you didn't really know. I mean, look, I think the assumption has to be that if you live in Hollywood or you live in New York and you're entertainment, you're probably a left-leaning person, unless you are totally silent, in which case I think that you might not be. But I do think that the question of, how did this pivot occur, and is there a way out of it? And honestly, in the process, are comedians cutting their own throats? Because if you only allow humor in one direction, ultimately it's going to be a failed humor.
I mean, satire is usually directed at those who are in power.
That's
right.
And
that's what it's supposed to do. And this is why political cartoons, for example, throughout our history have been so powerful, because they expose truths that also have a cultural salience, right? They show things in a way, they visualize what we know to be true, and is often something you're not supposed to say, or those in power don't want you to feel comfortable saying. What's happened now is, particularly when you're talking about the gatekeepers of our culture, they determine what jokes are allowed and are not allowed, and they certainly don't want them being directed at the people who are in power. And that just goes to right now, Clay, what is there to make fun of if you're Stephen Colbert, if you're these other, I haven't seen their shows in a long time. I see clips of them occasionally. What is there to make, you can't make fun of the Biden administration. You're not going to make fun of the fact that there's a senile buffoon who is actually president of the United States, because that's your team. So all the actual comedy that people might be making is always encumbered by this subservience to political belief. And that's why comedy's basically dead. That plus everything that's actually funny now, you can't say out loud in a public forum without possibly losing your job, being kicked out of your housing. You know, that's where we are.
It's also why I think you're seeing Bill Maher cut through the noise to a certain extent now with his HBO show. But I got to cut through the noise and save you some money. And right now, do you believe you could save up to $1,000 a month? That's $12,000 a year just by doing something incredible, easy. Pick up your phone and call our friends at American Financing. As we move into the fall and you start to think about the expenses for the end of the year, maybe even start thinking about taxes a little bit, how much of a difference could $1,000 a month make in your life at American Financing? It is a massive difference. Buck and I have both made sure that we get the lowest possible mortgage rate. Have you? Have you gotten locked in? Have you made a simple phone call to save yourself $1,000 a month? A lot of people still haven't. Buck, how can we save them up to 12 grand a year?
So easy. Right now, just call 800-777-8109. That number again is 800-777-8109, or visit AmericanFinancing.net. American Financing, NMLS 182334, NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck. We're going to have updates for all of you on the situation in Afghanistan. Some Democrats are saying all U.S. citizens are out. Chuck Schumer said that. That's interesting because it's not true, but they're already furiously rewriting the history of this. They're talking about a Biden doctrine, and we're learning more about the Taliban. Looks like the old Taliban in a lot of ways. including some of the leadership. We'll get into this coming up at the top of the next hour. Clay had mentioned that there was there's a dearth of humor from people that have these supposed comedian positions on TV. They're really political commentators who occasionally make jokes. And Jimmy Kimmel, who, I mean, he's gone after people on the right in ways that I thought were just, I'm not even talking about to make jokes about, but in a more personal way, seems kind of nasty. Here he is talking about, this is his version of comedy. Play it.
Dr. Fauci said that if hospitals get any more overcrowded, they're going to have to make some very tough choices about who gets an ICU bed. That choice doesn't seem so tough to me. Vaccinated person having a heart attack? Yes, come right on in. We'll take care of you. Unvaccinated guy who gobbled horse goo? Rest in peace, Wheezy. We've still got a lot of pandimwits out there. People are still taking this ivermectin. You know, the poison control centers have seen as this spike in calls from people taking this livestock medicine to fight the coronavirus, but they won't take the vaccine.
Apparently, he's paid millions and millions of dollars by, what is it, Disney, to be a moron and a liar, because that's what that sound clip says to me. First of all, the horse, anyone who says it's a horse drug is an idiot who's being dishonest. It's not even possible to be that stupid. But Clay, I mean, this is what we're up against.
Yeah, look, I think the whole horse, and we need to play later in the show the Joe Rogan clip, because you took ivermectin. It was prescribed to you when you had COVID.
Yes, by a highly regarded infectious disease specialist of 40 years almost of practice in New York City. Yes.
And it's not the same doctor, but Joe Rogan, I'm sure, also had ivermectin prescribed to him by a doctor. It has been prescribed to humans for decades. As a drug, right? It also
has saved probably millions of lives over the course of many years.
Yeah. So this is, that clip to me is emblematic of, in many ways, the failure of comedy, because it's not a joke that would have been made, I don't believe, by David Letterman or Jay Leno. And look, I know Jimmy because I do a show with his cousin, Sal. Jimmy and I mean, he's a good dude. I like him, on an individual basis. And he's good friends with Adam Carolla, Buck, who has almost identical opinions to you and me in many different respects, except Carolla is a lot funnier. And if you watch The Man Show back in the day, which I bet you watched some clips of back in the day when, because you're around the same age as me.
Can neither confirm nor deny. Yeah.
The Man Show, which was Adam Carolla and Jimmy Kimmel, and which my buddy Sal wrote on, is fabulously funny. And I think the distance between late night television today and what The Man Show could do represents a failure fundamentally of comedy. And to your point earlier, if you are, and I think it's a big question, and I don't know the answer. You know, Gutfeld is having a lot of success by effectively being the anti-Colbert, right? He's coming at things from a right-wing perspective, where Colbert comes at it from a left-wing perspective. Is there still a space in comedy for a guy who is basically right down the middle, or a girl, going after equal side humor? I don't know that there is, Buck. I wonder on some level whether we have so, and I'm making up a word here potentially, nichified comedy, that the only way you can win in society, and I wonder about this and worry about this a little bit, is if you are trying to appeal to a targeted demo instead of trying to appeal to the masses.
Well, this is also what happens when you have gatekeepers, those who control platforms, corporations openly going woke. And now what you have is, you could call it the balkanization of the media. Yes. It certainly happened in news and commentary. When I got into this 10 years ago, Clay, MSNBC would say, Buck, we want to have you debate jihadism or something with so-and-so. And we'd actually get to fight it out on TV. CNN would have people say, how could you ever work at CNN? Because they let me go on and crush and comedies, debates. And it was fun. You could actually do that. Now they would cheat and they would talk over you. And, you know, there's a lot of, like, it was a hostile environment. But at least it used to happen. Now no one really does this anymore. It doesn't exist. And everyone just wants, you know, they want what they expect from a host to be said night in and night out. And I mean, Clay, you know, I understand that, you know, the Jimmy Kimmel, maybe he's a nice guy person to person, but the stuff that he's saying, given what we're going through as a country and the real threats we face, I mean, it's reckless, man. It's bad. It's not cool at all to pretend that people are that people shouldn't go. He says that. He makes that as a joke. Other people are going to say, yeah, you know what? You're right. Unvaccinated people shouldn't get into the ICU. I mean, that's a real issue right now.
What's crazy is at least he's a comedian saying that. They're a real doctor saying that. That I basically, hey, I'm not going to treat you if you are not vaccinated. And to me, again, all of this begs the question, has the left wing in many ways killed comedy? Well, have they destroyed all comedy?
I think we got to be honest. I think the mockery comes in advance of the policy a lot of the time. It's oh, those stupid Trumpers won't do this, or those Trumpers won't do that, and they make jokes about it, and then all of a sudden it's Pelosi and Schumer on the floor of Congress who are advocating, or the Biden administration just saying, this needs to happen. And enough people have bought into the lies that the mockery are built on that they go, yeah, you know what, I guess we do have to do it. It's not funny anymore, Clay, right? That's what they'd say. It's reality now. We have to make them do this.
And I think this is also a function of Twitter, right? Because Twitter is so far left-wing, yet it is, for media people, catnip, right? Even if you're a middle-of-the-road or right-wing person, you still understand that that is where stories come and where debates take place.
Well, I mean, what percent of the country is really on Twitter? Isn't it like 3 or something? I mean, it's
2% of people are actually active tweeting on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah,
1 in 50.
It's people that live in our world that are related. We'll come back to this,
because
we have so many calls. People obviously people are fired up, because this does matter to the culture and to our politics, as Breitbart said, politics downstream of culture. We'll come back though with some Afghanistan updates for you, just about the Biden administration. Is it getting in the way of some of these evacuations? And what is Pelosi already saying about it? Clay, what else is top of mind for you, hour two?
Look, I think you keep making fun of me about the budget, but Manchin coming out and
you get super excited about budgetary
matters. I am pretty excited about the budget. The Robert E. Lee statue coming down, I got some big thoughts on that. And I think we still have to dive into this COVID madness, even though we've talked about it a great deal. Take your calls as well.
Coming up in a few. Stick around.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.